The next case, number 191283, Mohammed Abdelrahman Daoud v. William P. Barr.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. My name is Evie Mayer Salins, and I represent Petitioner Mohammed Daoud. May I please have 2 minutes for rebuttal?
Yes.
Thank you. Your Honors, Mr. Daoud suffers from debilitating mental illness, and he was imprisoned, beaten, and raped after the government removed him to Sudan.
We do know the facts. It might be good if you move directly to the legal arguments.
Yes, thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
He filed a motion to reopen and reconsider because it was supposed to be an important safeguard. But the BIA erred in three critical ways on threshold issues before even reaching the substantive issues he had raised in his motion. First, the BIA failed to consider equitable tolling. Second, the BIA failed to apply this court's binding precedent in Perez-Santana when it relied on the regulatory departure bar, even though Daoud was asserting a statutory right to reopen based on changed country conditions. And third, the BIA erred in denying Mr. Daoud's statutory motion in the exercise of discretion, where the statutory language does not permit discretion.
In thinking about this, BIA, in its discretion, decided to reject all of your client's claims for various reasons. If the BIA could do so, wouldn't that take care of any equitable tolling argument?
To the extent that the board has any discretion at all, remand is
yes
still
or no,
warranted.
Please, and no. Then you can move on.
No, to the extent that the BIA has any discretion at all, remand is still warranted because after full consideration of the equities underlying the equitable tolling analysis, those equities likely would change the result of the discretionary determination on remand, especially whereas here, the discretionary determination heavily weighed the passage of time since the entry of the order of removal. So the equitable tolling determination is critical.
So you use your first argument to support your third argument. There was error on equitable tolling, and therefore they abused their discretion. Is that the argument?
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay, go ahead.
Yes. So the BIA failed altogether to address Mr. Daoud's challenge to the immigration judge's equitable tolling determination. And this court in Wilmer held that failure to consider arguments and ignoring arguably applicable law crosses the line from merely deficient to plainly arbitrary. And that error is critical because if tolling applies, then the motion is deemed timely and the departure bar does not apply. That's true irrespective of this court's decision regarding the changed country conditions exception, as indeed those are two separate routes to deeming the motion timely. And as noted, it also matters to the discretionary determination. So remand is appropriate because this court cannot meaningfully review the BIA's equitable tolling determination because the BIA did not squarely address the issue.
Could you focus on the statutory claims that the government makes? I see them as being two. One is they're saying under 240C7C2, which is this proceeding, a motion for reopen, only applies to relief under 208 or 241B3. And that both of those themselves require the person to be in the country. So we therefore don't have the problem we have under Santana. That seems to be their first statutory textual argument.
Yes, with regard to the changed country conditions exception, the statutory language does hinge on asylum and withholding of removal rather than CAT. With regard to equitable tolling, all three forms of relief would be included.
And then their second one seems to be that they found as an alternative grounds that your client's ineligible for asylum due to aspects of his criminal history pointing to the robbery. And doesn't that trigger their discretion? Because under 1231, if I have it right, the exception from removal, if the AG decides because of a serious criminal history, he's a danger to the community.
With regard to withholding of removal, there is a bar due to particularly serious crimes. That issue was not decided by the BIA.
So you read that reference that they clearly, the IJ clearly decided that issue.
The immigration judge decided that at the initial stage, yes.
And then they make a reference of it and seem to say that anyhow the IJ determined robbery is a particularly challenging, particularly serious crime.
Yes, the BIA does reference that in the decision. However, the argument still holds with regard to equitable tolling, which again is relevant for CAT as well as withholding of removal and asylum. But to the extent that the BIA's decision mentions that, the BIA's holding is based on their determination that the departure bar applies. And here, the departure bar is applied even though this court held in Perez-Santana that the post-departure bar cannot prevent a non-citizen from invoking his statutory right to file a motion to reopen. The statute clearly states that there is no time limit on the filing of a motion to reopen, and in looking at the statutory scheme that governed motions to reopen, this court in Perez-Santana already held that the statutory language was clear, at least with regard to motions filed within the 90-day time period.
So let me pose a hypothetical. Suppose they looked at everything you wanted them to look at, interpreted the statute the way you said, and then at the end said, having looked at everything, we are denying the motion to reopen in an exercise of our discretion due to the passage of time and the serious criminal history. Is your argument that they would have no ability to issue such a ruling?
That's correct, Your Honor. Because when Congress enacted the statute in 1996, it codified a non-citizen's right to file a motion to reopen. And in so doing, it took a significant degree of discretion out of the agency's hands. The BIA cited to no authority for its exercise of discretion, but it seems to be looking at the regulations at 8 CFR 103.23B3 and 8 CFR 103.2. Those regulations predate the statute codifying motions to reopen, so they can't be relied on as the BIA's interpretation of the statute. But even if they could, the statute is clear. The plain language of the motions to reopen statute at 1229A(c)(7) does not contain discretionary language.
Well, what about the passage? I'm sorry, go ahead. What about the passage of time? How would they not consider that in equitable tolling?
They certainly should consider the passage of time in equitable tolling.
But then when they say that we would deny this anyhow due to the passage of time and the serious criminal history, are you saying that would have been okay if they just hadn't added the last four words?
I think if they had considered the passage of time in conducting a due diligence analysis in response to his equitable tolling arguments, that would have been okay. The problem here is that the BIA didn't conduct a due diligence analysis. They didn't conduct an equitable tolling analysis. Instead, they simply said in the exercise of discretion, based on a number of factors, we're denying. But there is no discretion allowed pursuant to the statute because the statutory language is clear. The statute has no discretionary language. And indeed, within the same provision of the statute that codifies motions to reopen, we see that there is discretionary language. So with that, thank you, Your Honors.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Elizabeth Fitzgerald-Sambu on behalf of Respondent, the U.S. Attorney General. Here, both parties agree that the criminal alien bar applies, meaning that the Immigration and Nationality Act has restricted this Court to reviewing only cognizable legal questions and constitutional claims due to this petitioner's criminal conviction. So here I'd first point out that although we don't concede, obviously, that the petitioner's arguments are correct, even if this Court were to suspend judgment and agree with the petitioner that if the statute is silent, or that the statute is a clear meaning that nothing else could be filled with the regulations, then this petitioner wouldn't be eligible for anything. Because here, the petitioner's conviction bars him from asylum and statutory withholding of removal. So here, the Convention Against Torture Protection is not listed in the Immigration and Nationality Act statute. So here, even if this court says that the plain meaning applies, this actual petitioner would not be eligible for anything due to his criminal convictions. So just pointing that out initially. Here, I would first point out that
This is your statutory argument that under 240C7C2, they can only get either 208 or 241B3 relief, and either of those is contingent on being in the country?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, Your Honor. So both of those provisions, the asylum provision and the statutory withholding provision, which are explicitly cross-referenced in the motion to reopen statute, as Your Honor just pointed out, those require physical presence in the United States.
But I think the response to that I just heard, the counter-argument is, but this is a request for equitable tolling.
Yes. Equitable tolling is a separate and distinct issue. So equitable tolling is when someone requests, they file something untimely and they request that because they showed extraordinary circumstances and due diligence, that therefore they should be treated as though they filed within the 90 days. So that's an entirely different type of motion than this sort of changed circumstance request to apply for asylum or statutory withholding of removal. So that also goes to petitioner's argument that Santana applies, at least regarding the departure bar. So in Santana, this court held that the statute, the silence within the motion to reopen statute, the 90-day provision, meant that Congress intended aliens to have the right to apply or to file a motion to reopen no matter where they are in the world. However, the changed circumstances exception here has never been litigated, or there's no precedent on it in this court or any circuit court with this narrow exception for applying for asylum and statutory withholding of removal. So here, petitioner makes an argument that, you know, the motion to reopen is meant to be a safeguard, to correct the underlying proceedings, etc. But here, this is a totally different issue here. Essentially, petitioner wants individuals to be able to be removed from the United States and apply for asylum or statutory withholding of removal for life, essentially. At any point in time, even if they're removed 25 years ago and then there's a coup, then now all of a sudden the United States government is obligated to somehow coordinate that individual's return to the United States to then be placed in removal proceedings again and apply for asylum and statutory withholding of removal, which the Immigration and Nationality Act explicitly provides is only available to aliens in the United States. And over the course of history, even when asylum and statutory withholding of removal began after World War II, there has always been a requirement that the individual is inside the United States. So essentially what the petitioner is asking this court to do is sort of change the course of history and say that now individuals who were removed, as in this case for the criminal convictions, etc., are now eligible to then apply for asylum and statutory withholding of removal from abroad via a motion to reopen at any time, even if it's, you know, almost 100 years later. Which clearly, in our view, Congress did not intend. Instead, as the board pointed out in its decision, Congress created a whole separate provision for refugee processing. That is the type of method that individuals who are abroad come into the United States if they fear persecution.
She says because of the circumstances, he would be ineligible to come apply for refugee status for 10 years.
Correct, Your Honor, but as we noted, there are waivers, but again, this issue is bigger than just petitioner. So here, essentially, if this court rules on petitioner's side, then maybe he would not be able to come in as a refugee again, because he already came in as a refugee initially. But here, essentially, if this court agrees with petitioner's argument, that opens the door to everybody, not just this petitioner.
Okay, one of the things that troubles me about this case is less the specific arguments than the fact that the BIA essentially has two holdings, one of which would exclude a whole category of people from ever applying for reopening, and the other of which is much more case-specific and says, all right, as a matter of our discretion, considering the passage of time and everything else, we would deny this relief. So the Justice Department comes in and in some ways seeks to insulate the ruling from the more serious ruling that has broader ramifications from judicial review by saying you really can't even reach that issue because there is an alternate ground here, and that alternate ground, abuse of discretion, doesn't present a legal issue or a constitutional issue because she didn't exhaust below the only possible legal problem. So I appreciate if you will, in some ways, the wisdom of the Justice Department approach here, but it leaves some law out there that may be a little doubtful.
Which law do you mean, Your Honor? I guess in our view...
The ruling about the regulatory bar being compelled by the statute.
Meaning the...
Or at least consistent with... Yeah, if the immigrant isn't here at the time, has had the 90 days, never filed, was removed, that the immigrant cannot then seek asylum or withholding of removal thereafter. That's the more serious issue in the case.
Right, Your Honor. And I think, at least in the government's view, the discretionary denial and the departure bar denial are two entirely separate tracks. So although they both relate to asylum and statutory withholding, they're two entirely separate bases for denying, and the regulations at issue are different. So there's a departure bar regulation, which is the main holding of the board, at least, and then there's the discretionary denial, which now petitioner is challenging a different portion of the motion to reopen regulation.
Yeah, I fully understand that, but, you know, courts are supposed to avoid some issues and decide on the narrowest grounds possible.
Correct, Your Honor.
We don't always do that, but...
Right. Well, the government would urge this court to rule, or just to rely on this, the discretionary denial of the board's, the board's discretionary denial of the motion, and just hold that this court lacks jurisdiction because exhaustion of issues is mandatory. The Immigration and Nationality Act provides that has to be done. So here, the petitioner didn't exhaust this issue in his brief to the board.
And she says, well, there was another legal error and not doing an explicit equitable tolling analysis. You say, well, the BIA actually did do an equitable tolling analysis. It may be implicit. And certainly when they say we've considered the passage of time in our discretionary denial, that's a very good indication that they took equitable tolling into account.
Correct, Your Honor. Correct. And I would also note, just to counter something petitioner said, that when the board denies as a matter of discretion, that's it doesn't matter if it's sort of a discretionary form of relief or even... Or for example, even if the statute is timely, filed within the 90 days, the board still has the authority to deny as a matter of discretion under the regulations. So that's separate and apart from the timeliness issue also.
Okay.
But regarding equitable tolling, yes, it's our position that the board reached equitable tolling when it affirmed the immigration judge's decision. So as this court knows, the board sometimes issues a summary affirmance where they just say, we are affirming the immigration judge's decision. And this court's case law and throughout the country, the case law is that when the board uses the language that's affirming an immigration judge's decision, the immigration judge's analysis is then sort of looped into the board's decision. So here our position is that because the board stated that it was affirming the motions as untimely filed, that incorporated in the immigration judge's analysis of untimeliness, which included an entire in-depth equitable tolling analysis. And I would also note that in the equitable tolling analysis that the immigration judge issued, it's regarding due diligence. The immigration judge found that the petitioner failed to show due diligence, and that's why the immigration judge did not equitably toll, which is an entirely separate analysis from extraordinary circumstances, which the agency did not reach here.
You know, I can see that the BIA shouldn't be in a worse position because it actually issues an opinion as opposed to a summary affirmance. On the other hand, the proposition you're arguing for is really quite broad. The mere use of the term affirmance seems to me doesn't quite carry the weight that you would want us to adopt. To me, more important is the very explicit description of what the IJ did here and the use of language that suggests that the BIA did actually consider the argument.
Yes, Your Honor,
equitable tolling.
Yes, and also the board did say that it found no basis for authorizing the untimely finding, which again is additional language showing that they considered equitable tolling and decided to reject that argument on appeal as well. But if there's nothing else, we would urge this court to dismiss the petition for review. Thank you so much.
Your Honor, I'd like to briefly address your exchange with my opponent here. First, with regard to the equitable tolling decision of the BIA, the BIA's decision did not explicitly affirm any equitable tolling decision.
There is this tension. People don't like some of our opinions because we don't dot every I and every T. And you're sort of saying that we should remand because the BIA didn't use a particular expression explicitly, although there are very good reasons to read the opinion as implicitly reaching that issue.
Well, Your Honor, the BIA decision merely affirms the denial of the motion to reconsider as untimely, and that's insufficient for two reasons. First, the BIA frequently considers timeliness and the applicability of equitable tolling separately. For example, we see in matter of Blanca Lopez Gutierrez, the BIA saying, quote, despite the untimeliness of the instant motion, the respondent has sufficiently shown that the 90-day filing deadline for her motion is equitably tolled under controlling circuit law, suggesting a two-step analysis. Secondly, the BIA's affirmance of the immigration judge's denial of the motion to reconsider as untimely makes no mention of the motion to reopen. This court can't assume that the reasoning applies in both contexts because to do so would be a Chenery violation. Instead, the court has to accept or reject the agency's decision based on the reasoning provided by the agency.
Based on the reasoning. So if you think the reasoning is implicit, there's no violation of Chenery. It's more a matter of how explicit the BIA has to be about everything.
Yes.
I'm kind of looking for a manageable rule.
Yes, Your Honor. I would say that where the BIA explicitly adopts the immigration judge's reasoning, that would be fine. But here that didn't happen.
Okay.
Counsel, the BIA didn't just say that the motion was untimely. It said it was filed almost 2 years late and then goes on to say we find no basis to conclude that the 30-day filing deadline does not apply. I mean, why would it go through all of that sort of language if it wasn't considering the arguments made? I mean, it'd be very simple just to say it's untimely, period.
Yes, Your Honor, it would be simple to say it was untimely. Here, they basically said it was untimely in that 2 years had passed.
And we find no basis to conclude that it doesn't apply.
Right, they found no basis to find...
But that language must have some meaning. I would assume it has some meaning.
Yes, I would assume that the meaning is that the statutory basis, that 30-day deadline, applies, but that doesn't mean that the deadline can't be excused. There are exceptions in the statute, but that's separate from being excused based on equitable tolling. And with that, if there are no further questions,
I have one. So if you're wrong that it's a separate issue and this language doesn't go to it, if you're wrong about that, why would the BIA reject 30 days but then go on and not reject 90 days?
Your Honor, honestly, I'm not sure what was going through the BIA's mind, and that is why I would ask this court to remand. The BIA's decision here does not clearly address the
statute. And how many years has this case gone on?
How many years has this case gone on? Well, Mr. Jones,
from the time he was detained.
Well, he was ordered removed back in 2013, so it's now been over 7 years that we're trying to get him some justice.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.